Hi everyone, welcome to the KidCast. So this episode is with the lovely Lucy, and her little boy Freddie was born prematurely. So we talk a lot about the struggles to do with bringing up a baby who is born prematurely, and then also the struggles from a mother's point of view when you are then separated from your baby and what that does to you. But then we talk about career, we talk about money and finances, we talk about image, self-image and identity or loss of identity. Lucy is hilarious anyway, so you will love this episode. But if you can, please let me know any feedback, anything you want us to talk through with other guests. And equally, if you do want to be a guest, please do reach out. It's never as daunting as you would imagine, and people always say after they leave that they feel much more relieved, they feel lighter, they feel like they've had a therapy session. And I have to say, for me, this podcast is like therapy. But thank you, enjoy, and I will speak to you soon. Freddie is 12 on his next birthday.
Yeah, Freddie's 12 in November.
Take me back to finding out you're pregnant.
Oh my god. Not conventional at all. Chris and I hadn't been together very long. We're talking months.
Yeah.
Could count it as weeks.
Okay.
When I found out I was pregnant and I'd just gone back to do my recurring training for air hostessing.
Yeah.
And I was in the training centre. I couldn't keep my eyes open. I felt so sick.
Yeah.
I thought it was stress. And I went to the toilet and I rang my mum and I was like, how late should you be on your period before you get concerned? And my mum was like, get to the supermarket or Boots and get a pregnancy test. To which I did.
Yeah.
And obviously the inevitable, yeah, we were pregnant. And I think it shocked a lot of people. You know, and I was asked to come home to my mum and dad's house and have a conversation. They sat both, Chris and I, on the couch. Before we got there, Chris said, let me sit by the door. And I don't know the area where your mum and dad live, so where am I running if I need to run?
Oh, well,
So we sat on the couch. My mum is... sounds amazing. Mm. She's the best mum in the world. But she has this way of really making you feel like... millimeters tall when she needs to be your mum, she is your mum.
Mm.
So we sat on the couch and she goes, well, what have you got to say for yourselves? What happened? And I was like, you've got two kids, you know how this happened, so do you want to know how, or do you just want to know that it happened? Don't you get smart with me? And so
I can imagine you saying that to her as well.
I understood why yeah. They were concerned. You know, I'd not long come out of a really long relationship where I lived with a person, mm-hmm. and I then moved home. So I understood the concerns. I did. Literally, 15 minutes later, my dad goes, I'll go make us a cup of tea, and brings the tea and biscuits in. And from nowhere, my mum whipped out the mother care catalogue. So, obviously, I told her I was pregnant on the phone and then had to go home and have this conversation. She could not help herself. And from nowhere, she whipped out a mother care catalogue. Well, I really like this crib and I think this is really nice. And that pram looks good. So, yeah, it was quite scary and exciting at the same time. Yeah. You know, I'd always thought that I wanted to be a mum. I'd always, you know, kind of thought of myself as being a mum and having a baby. And then when it actually happened, I was like, oh, shit. Like, this is really happening. And I was only 23.
Mm-hmm.
Am I too young? Am I old enough? Am I still a kid myself? But it was, yeah, it was amazing. My pregnancy was horrendous, though. to the point, I questioned all my choices.
Mm-hmm.
I had... hyperemesis Garvardium.
Oh, lovely.
In the severest of forms. Before it was trendy when Kate Middleton had it and everyone was like, the princess. No, hun, I had it 2 years prior to that and was hospitalised on the weekly having a drip and, you know...
It's horrific, isn't it?
Oh, my God. It's so hard to explain to someone who hasn't had morning sickness to the extreme and then some.
Yeah.
Morning sickness is one thing and it's bad enough. Mm-hmm. Like, even being pregnant without morning sickness is hard. Mm-hmm. But that was a whole nother level. And having to go in 10 o'clock on a Thursday to see Mr. Davis, the consultant to Ormskirk, to have this infusion. Eventually they found something that helped me be able to eat, but for such a long time, for maybe the first 16 to 20 weeks, mm-hmm. they couldn't find anything of all the conventional mm-hmm. medications they could give me. And then obviously I was like taking medication in pregnancy, you know, should I be doing that? Mm-hmm. Should I not be doing that? You know, you look at advice and, oh, it was really, really hard. And then they found that it was actually a combination of drugs from America.
Yeah.
It's not something they'd done over here before. Mm-hmm. And it had been tested on one other person, and I was the second person they tested it on, and it looked like green Powerade.
Oh, wow.
It was like a drip of green Powerade. So for every bag of that I had to have a bag of fluid because I couldn't even keep water down. So food, I got about 10, 15 minutes. Water just used to come back up. And I couldn't drink anything else. So it was... Yeah, lots of hydration drips and stuff. And it was like green Powerade. And I'd be fine for maybe 48 to 72 hours.
Mm.
And then I'd be horrendous again. So they used to do it on a Thursday so that I could get the weekend out of it. And then I wasn't great again. Mm. And that lasted right up until I had him.
Oh, wow.
Like, it did never go away. Ever. I think once I'd gone past about 6.5-7 months,
mm-hmm.
I started to be able to eat like a plain chicken sandwich.
Mm.
And I craved chicken wings.
Wow.
Which is really odd.
Mm.
I could get a bit of time out of it, but I couldn't. Yeah. Just couldn't keep it down.
Do you know what causes that? Or is it just a hormone change? Or?
So there's loads of theories around women's bodies only being able to accept a certain gender of baby. There's loads of theories around that. And there's loads of theories around you're more sick with boys or you're more sick with girls. And I genuinely don't know, but it was just vile. And it really did make me question all of my life choices at that point. You know, my dad was having to tie my shoes for me. My dad was having to rub my back. Just no.
Yeah.
Nope. Nope. And nope.
Do you think your experience in pregnancy, because you are quite open about this, saying you do not want any more kids.
No.
And you haven't. You've literally just got Fred. Do you think your experience of pregnancy has influenced that decision?
Yeah, I do. I think it's had quite a big influence on it. I don't think it's been the only... Well, I know it's not been the only deciding factor.
Mm-hmm.
But the thought of going through that again and putting my body through that, putting Chris through that, because it was really tough for him as well. You know, everyone thinks it's just about the mum, but mm-hmm. the effect that had on him, you know, wasn't great for his mental health. That was, you know, worrying about the baby, worrying about me, you know, and he was going off to Manchester to work every day, and it was a lot. So, you're right, I am quite open about the fact that our choices to not have any more children, and that's something we've come to together. It has played a part, but I think adding in the birth to that was definitely it.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely my deciding factor that. I just don't think I'm strong enough to do it again. I don't feel strong enough to do it. I don't
mentally.
Feel mentally and physically. I lost so much weight when I was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Great for when I'd had him. But I lost so much weight when I was pregnant, and that's not necessarily healthy
mm-hmm.
either. But mentally, the toll it takes on you, because you question yourself, am I doing anything wrong? Am I, you know, am I sleeping the wrong way? Am I eating the wrong thing? All of the things that, and you're alone with your thoughts quite a lot of the time when you're pregnant, because you're just as you and the baby.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, no, I don't think I am mentally strong. And anyone who goes on to have more children, I absolutely doff my cap to them, because I think anyone who's a parent, be it biologically or not, are the most incredible people. They really are, because to give another human all of you for a period of time, as a biological parent, you give them your body, they take from you. And as, you know, a dad or an adoptive parent or whatever that might look like, to give another human, be it a baby or, you know, a toddler, whatever, all of you, is a really selfless act. And I'm actually okay with admitting out loud, I didn't realise how selfish I was. And anyone who knows me and knows me well, I've said that to them. I didn't realise how selfish I was until I have Freddie. And I would like to think of myself as quite a giving person. And people always say, oh, you're so kind and you do so much for others.
Thoughtful.
But I don't do it when I don't want to do it. But you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
When this little alien comes out and just demands things and can't even communicate with you. So, yeah, I'm selfish and I don't want another one.
I don't blame you. The selfish part, for me, played a massive side of... was a massive contribution in me waiting until I was 29 to have a baby. And COVID was the reason why, because I was terrified of ruining my career or not being able to afford bills, because we were both self-employed. So if I took time out of work, how am I going to pay for things? But COVID forced that on us and made us realise, you know what? It's not actually as bad as we thought. It's not actually as tricky as we thought. So there's no time like the present.
No, and you're right. And I think whilst you've talked about the finance side of things, no one and nothing out there really prepares you for that drop in, you know, your income or whatever. And whilst I think we're very, very lucky and so very blessed to have the NHS and, you know, our maternity care is among some of the best in the world, and, you know, how lucky are we that we've got that? There are businesses out there, be it public or private businesses, they don't offer a maternity package. It's just whatever the government give you.
That's what I've got right now. But I didn't have any maternity pay at all.
And I think even SSP, though, is just...
That was part and parcel of it, because I was saying to Steve, if I'm getting paid as a higher education lecturer, albeit, what was my term? What was my thing? Associate tutor. So it was like a 0 hour contract, but I did 12 hours a week. I was getting paid £48 an hour there, and I'm doing 12 hours a week as one job, and I worked at four places at the time. Then the government are going to say to me, okay, Amber, I'll give you 156 quid?
Something like that. Something
shocking like that. A week to survive. Well, hang on, I earn more than that in a day. So how where am I making this money up from?
Yeah. How do you pay your bills?
Exactly.
You know, it's great that you and Steve are together and, you know, there's a partnership there, similar for Chris and I.
Yeah.
But nothing, unless you've got a nest egg behind you or, you know, an enhanced maternity package, which some companies do offer, and that's brilliant. And
yeah.
I think it's the very least people deserve. And it should be the same for lads as it is for girls, or men as it is for women.
Yeah.
You know, it absolutely baffles me. And, you know, there's this new thing of shared parental leave, and, you know, so the woman legally has to take a certain amount of time off, obviously for recovery, etc., etc. But if, let's say, I was the breadwinner in our relationship. If I was the breadwinner, I could choose to go back to work, and actually Chris
can have stay at home.
The maternity leave or paternity leave for up to 9 months and be paid statutory paternity or mm-hmm. shared parental leave. And it's something I didn't know anything about at the time, mm-hmm. but given what I do for a job now, know quite a lot about it. And I'm really passionate about is ensuring that people don't miss out. And I think the other thing is, when I had Freddie and we were in hospital for a period of time after mm-hmm. he was born, that counted towards Chris's paternity leave, whereas the laws just changed on that. So if your child is born prematurely and is in neonatal care, mm-hmm. your paternity leave doesn't start until
you come home.
Obviously, there's caveats, and obviously every individual will need to look at the, mm-hmm. at the circumstances and the business they work for, mm-hmm. but there has just been a change in the law for it, mm-hmm. where, if your baby is born premature, and that's something we didn't get.
Yeah.
You know, we were in hospital for 10 days, and I think we had maybe 5 days at home with Chris before he went back to work.
Yeah.
And it was so hard.
Shit,
after it? Just coming out from that situation, it was really hard.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting you talk about statutory maternity pay, because that is one of the reasons why I'm umming and ahhing about another baby within my current job, because my current pay is statutory. Whereas, and I go back and forth on this, because I went back to work when Bella was 3 weeks old, because I had to, because how else are we going to afford things? And I don't want to do that again if we have another. But
3 weeks old?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
I did only go back part time until she was 3 months, and then when she was 3 months, it was back to full kilter. Yeah. But Steve's paternity leave will be, hang on, by the time he left the hospital, it was about 1:45 in the morning, and he had a client at 6 a.m. So 4 hours, 4 hours 15 minutes, probably less by the time he's driven home from the women's back to Aintree at that time.
Yeah. Oh my word.
Shocking. Like, really bad. So yeah. But I don't want to have to do that again.
No.
But equally, hang on, my mortgage is £1,300 a month. How am I gonna pay that when I'll be on about £1,600 less a month?
It makes it so hard.
It does.
And
it's mind blowing.
The decisions that you have to make because of the way things are.
Yeah.
And I think, again, something that you don't really understand until you become a parent is how much being a parent not just costs time-wise, but financially. Yeah. It physically costs. I'm sure there's a statistic out there that says
250 grand, isn't it?
250 grand by the time your kid's 18.
And that's just like,
imagine we said, now can I send it back for a refund? And I'll have all of my money back.
I fucking dread it. I'm spending $7.99 a day on fucking magazines with cheap tat in the front because she's obsessed with them. So yeah.
Yeah, it's so hard because they're too little to understand that. And you want to keep them innocent. You don't want them.
Honestly,
want them to understand it.
My parents, they probably won't like this comment, but the amount of times we were told, I'm sorry, I can't get that, I can't afford it. We haven't got any money for that, you can't have that. I never, ever, I've sworn to myself that I will never say those words to Bella. She will never hear those words out of my mouth. Ever.
And it's mad, isn't it? Because up to the contrary of that,
yeah.
As kids growing up in my house, we had the best of everything. Yeah. And we never heard those words, but always knew our limits. Mm-hmm. And I would never have known. This is actually a conversation I had with my dad about 3 weeks ago.
Mm.
I would never have known whether they were struggling financially or not,
mm-hmm.
because we never saw that.
Yeah.
You know, and it was great. As a kid, it was great not to know the cost of everything.
Yeah.
But we were taught the value of things.
Yeah.
You know, holidays, going out for meals, mm-hmm. you know, presents, gifts, whatever that might look like. Mm-hmm. We knew the value of it.
Yeah.
But we didn't know the cost of it.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've brought with me into being a parent is that I would like Freddie to know the value of everything, but not focus on the cost. And it is very different now for, you know, for an 11-year-old boy than it was for an 11-year-old Lucy 20-something years ago. You know, it is very, very different. And I think we are quite lucky that we grew up in an era. Obviously, we're very similar age.
I feel very blessed that we grew up when we grew up.
100%. Yeah. But I also think it's probably a really hard generation because we've gone from the more simplistic of things, like playing Kirby in the street till the street lights come on and that's when you went in.
Yeah.
And making dens in the garden in the summer.
Yeah.
To now being in this, to be an adult, but young enough to still be learning in this really technological world.
Mm-hmm.
And the way, even in maternity, you know, in the way you raise your child, mm-hmm. or everything that's available at your disposal, how drastically it's changed. And actually, now the kids, I'm sure Bella's the same. I've got a little niece called Alice, she's 4,
mm-hmm.
and the most astute and savvy little girl I've ever had the pleasure of knowing.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to swipe a phone.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to get rid of a notification.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to turn a TV on. They don't want to watch CBeebies. Do you remember the Playdays bus?
Mm-hmm.
And Rugrats.
Fucking loved Rugrats. Oh, loved it.
Loved Rugrats.
Hated Angelica. Loved Rugrats.
I kind of liked Angelica.
I can see Angelica in you, to be honest.
I can.
I get that.
But, like, they were Saturday morning live and kicking.
Yeah. What was that on with Holly Willoughby?
I mean, SMTV Live.
Yes.
Wonky Donkey.
Oh my God. Wonky Donkey. Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas now, they're not even interested.
No.
It's out on YouTube.
Yeah.
YouTube, I mean, fair play to whoever invented YouTube because they are making it rain, probably. But Jesus wept. Just watch a cartoon.
Yeah. Put Scooby-Doo on.
Get the Mystery Machine on the go.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. It is.
Yeah.
It's a massive thing. You're absolutely right, though. Bella can watch a YouTube video on my phone and, like, knows how to double-click to make it fast-forward.
Skip an ad.
Yeah.
Skip an ad. Yeah. You're inconveniencing me.
Yeah.
Skip.
Yeah.
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 I take our friend, little girl, to nursery. She goes to the same school as Freddie and her older brother. And I take her on 2 days a week. And she goes in slightly after the boys. So we sit in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And I get, she can't say Lulu, because all the kids call me Lulu.
Mm-hmm.
You, mm-hmm. our Cockamayan. So Cockamayan comes on. And I'm, honest to God, I am, by the time I come back and sit at my desk at home, I am brainwashed by Cocomelon.
Do you know what? One of the mums in a mum group I'm in said, Cocomelon is like crack for kids. I remember thinking, you have nailed that. Like, absolutely nailed it. And one mum said, it's reserved in our house for emergencies only.
Break out the Cocomelon.
Yeah. And I thought, I get it. I absolutely get it. I remember sitting on the couch one day with Bella, waiting to Steve to come in from work for me to go out to work, and literally, like, rocking to the, you know, because everything's the same tune, isn't it? I'm not realising that I was still rocking side to side when he got in. He was like, are you okay?
In the night garden. It's like that.
I've not seen that.
Treat yourself. Okay. Go on YouTube and watch it and skip the ads.
Treat myself.
Treat yourself to In the Night Garden with the Ninky Nonk and the Pinky Ponk and
oh wow, can't wait already.
No wonder the kids are spaced out these days.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Right. Birth.
Oh.
Yeah, I know.
Oh.
So you're 33 and a half weeks?
I'm just approaching 34 weeks.
Yeah.
And Oh.
If you need to cry.
No. What? No. So, Oh, it wasn't the 5th of November, actually. I have a baby shower.
Yeah.
On the 20th. See, the 28th or 29th of October.
Okay.
And I remember the day vividly. I had it then because lots of people were going away. I was due in December.
Yeah.
Like mid to late December. And I thought, you know, baby shower was close to Christmas. It was a lot.
Yeah.
So my sister and my mum, or sisters and my mum, threw a baby shower for me.
That's a bit witchy in it, even in itself, isn't it? That the baby shower was. I don't mean as in like close to Halloween. Like there must be a little bit of a something.
Yeah. So has this, and it was lovely. It was just in our next door neighbour's house. My mum's next door neighbour, Sheila.
Is she one of those, everyone's welcome?
It adores like a river. And you know what? I still go back and see her now. Big pan of scouse, loads of crusty bread.
Yeah.
And just some games. Oh, it was just gorgeous. And my mum and sisters put so much effort into it. Gorgeous afternoon. And everyone was taking bets, like, when I was going to have the baby. But from the back, you wouldn't have known I was pregnant because I lost so much weight because I was so poorly.
Mm-hmm.
And from the front, it just looked like I'd swallowed a ball. I actually looked the best I'd looked in years. I had cheekbones, the lot. Like, there's a lot to be said for this hyperemesis thing. But the week after that, I didn't feel quite right. We went to a parenting class in Hudson Primary.
Lovely.
On the Tuesday, and I just, something wasn't right. The midwife did my blood pressure and she was like, I think you should go up to the hospital. I was a premature baby. My mum had me prematurely. Oh, wow. So I was 8 weeks premature when I was born.
Mm.
Pardon the chip.
Don't worry.
Just getting comfy. I was 8 weeks premature, and preeclampsia can be hereditary and cannot be. It can just come on as well. So they set me up, and yes, my blood pressure was a little high, but I'd been particularly sick that day. I just wasn't feeling great. And they just said, look, come back in a week's time. We'll monitor. I was having growth and scans at this point as well. They were, you know, his thigh bones were small and yada, yada, yada. So that was on the Tuesday. I booked in on the Saturday for my lashes because Chris and I's anniversary is the 5th of November. Anyone who knows us knows that our day is the 5th of November.
Mm-hmm.
So we were going on, this was going to be our last date, just the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
And the 5th of November is so poignant to me. So I was like, right, I'm going to have my lashes done. I'm going to have my hair done. He booked a table in Matu, a window table, so that I didn't have to stand outside and watch the fireworks, heavily pregnant. And I was going to be able to watch them over the River Mersey. And I was so looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm lying down on the couch in my mum and dad's house having my lashes done by the absolutely gorgeous Jenny Hudson.
Jenny.
Yeah, so Jenny Hudson was doing my lashes. And if she listens to this, she'll absolutely laugh her head off because she still says it was one of the funniest moments. And I'm lying there having my lashes done thinking I'm like the absolute don.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I'd piss myself. She'd only done one eye.
Oh my God.
And I was like, Jen, I'm really sorry. Think I might have pissed myself. Just gonna go to the loo. And she's like, Lucy, you're what? And I was like, whoa, no. Get those tweezers back out and get the other eye done. Because if it is, I ain't going to no maternity unit with only one set of eyelashes on. So I goes and sorts myself out, comes back down, and she finishes the other eye.
Priorities.
Chris was in work, my mum was in work, my sister was in work, so it was just me and my dad.
Yeah.
My dad's pottering about in his shed, and again, anyone who knows Al knows that man loves his shed.
Mm-hmm.
Popped my head out the door, and I was like, Dad, I think my waters might have gone. And he just dropped his tools on the floor, and he was like, Okay, just go and ring Chris. And the maternity unit, I'll be there in a second. And what I didn't know until after I'd had Freddie was my dad rang my sister.
Yeah.
You better fucking get to this house now. Your sister's pissing herself. So off I toddles up to, Chris comes home from Manchester, toddles up to Ormskirk, yeah. And they were like, you've had a show.
Yeah.
We suggest you just take rest.
Okay.
Come back on such and such a day. Monitor your blood pressure if there's any changes, but we don't think it's just yet. So that was on the Saturday.
Mm.
On the Sunday...
Just before you talk about Sunday, did you get to go to the meal?
We haven't even... So me meal was the 5th of November, which was the Monday. This was the 3rd.
Ah, right, okay.
Okay. So the Sunday, San, my mum, decides it's the best idea to take me to Speak Retail Park. Chris was in work again. She says, there's a mamas and papas there. Why don't we just have a little walk around? We'll get some little baby bits, because you are, they're saying the baby's small, we'll get some smaller baby bits. And we'll get any final bits that you need, as you do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, mum. She walked me from one side of Speak Retail Park the whole way around to the other. And the whole way around, it was like there was a tap.
Mm-hmm.
And I was saying, mum, I'm pissing myself. Like, I'm 20.
I mean to laugh at you just when you just said that then.
I'm 23 and I'm incontinent. Like, yeah. This isn't okay.
It's not normal.
Let alone nappies for the baby. How about we get some for me? Yeah. Because I'm not okay with this. Don't be so bloody dramatic.
Mm.
The baby's just sitting on your bladder. No baby was sat on my bladder. I now know that was my waters.
Yeah.
And they had actually gone the day before.
Yeah.
But we thought Lucy was just pissing herself.
Yeah.
So we goes round, we get to the mamas and papas. Obviously, San and Al got fleeced.
Yeah.
Then unborn grandchild absolutely nailed on.
Before
said child was even here.
Yeah.
And goes home. And I was all excited for date day the next day. Fresh bedding on, little puppy pad for protection.
For pissing myself.
for the leakages.
Yeah.
I very, very distinctly remember going to bed on the Sunday night. And I said to Chris, I was like, imagine this is our last night. What would you do if the baby came? And he was like, you're ridiculous.
Mm.
Shut up. Like, turn over and go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So Uncle Fester's having a good old kid next to me. And I have to get up and keep changing my pyjamas and the puppy pad.
Yeah.
And I was like, this
is not normal.
It's not normal. And you'll know yourself and anyone who's been pregnant till now, the cramp you get in your calves when you're pregnant in bed is like nothing I've ever experienced. Well, this particular night, I go to get out of bed to go and change myself again.
Mm-hmm.
And I had cramp in both my calves and my legs give way from underneath me. So I fell to my knees and headbutted the side table.
You should write a fucking book.
Honest to God. Headbutting the side table. So get back in bed and Chris gets up. He was on a really early shift this day. He had to be in at something like 4 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. So I was supposed to be then going to Aquanatal, doing a bit of shopping with my mum, and then going for this gorgeous meal in Mattoo. I said to my mum, I have literally pissed myself all night. What am I to do? She was like, just stop exaggerating. The baby's on your bladder. I had it with Laurie, who's my sister.
Mm-hmm.
I had it with Laurie and it's fine. I was like, oh, okay. Okay, mum, no problem.
Mm.
So packs me little Aquanatal bag, off I goes to Parkpool. Midwife says, any issues, ladies? Anyone need to tell me about anything? And I was like, I've got a question for the group. Anyone else here pissed themselves on the reg? And the midwife was like, When you say you're wetting yourself, is it actual wee? Can you describe it to me? I was like, it smells like candy floss and it's as clear as water. Mm-hmm. She was like, please don't get in that pool. Go straight up to Ormskirk.
Mm-hmm.
So, Chris is in Manchester. San had gone to the dentist and was mid-extraction of a tooth.
Yeah.
My dad was working in Chester. My other sister, Nat, who I think would be stronger than Laurie,
yeah,
also works in Manchester.
Yeah.
And Laurie has always said to me, make sure I'm the last person you ring if you go into labour because I'll be absolutely shite. I was like, I've got no other option here. So I rang her. Hi, Laura.
Mm.
Think me waters have gone, they're sending me to the hospital. Laurie says no more than, just wait in the car park for me. I've just got out of the shower and I need to blow me hair. No problem, I'll wait for you to have your blowjob. And I will sit in Ormskirk car park. By which time she got there, the seat in my Ford Fiesta was a sopping wet. God knows who's got that car now, but they've got my hind waters in there with them. So I waddled in to Ormskirk. When she finally got there, looking like Elsa,
yeah,
waddles in and sat down, and they were waiting to check me, and I literally got up to go to the toilet,
mm-hmm,
and the whole lot just
went.
In the waiting room of the delivery suite where, yeah, all these lovely families were waiting for their newborn,
mm-hmm,
whatever it was, and I have literally, all of me insides have just come out on, yeah, the floor.
Yeah.
So goes in, and the bearing in mind, I'm still only 34 weeks pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of... I was scared.
Yeah.
I'm saying this with a lot of humour,
mm-hmm,
because I was really scared,
mm-hmm,
and I tried to use humour as a deflection tool. I wasn't feeling too humorous at the point when they hooked me up to the monitor and this doctor pulled a glove on. Like, you know when they go...
Yeah.
And it comes up their arm. And I was like, oh.
Where's that going? What
are you planning on doing with that hand, hon? Because just not feeling too comfortable about this. Our Laurie was sat there holding my hand. And she said, you know, if you put your hand in any deeper in my sister, she's going to spit your fingers out. So I was having an internal. And she was like, 3.5 centimetres dilated. I say, sorry, what now?
Yeah.
You're 3.5 centimetres dilated and your four waters have gone. Or your back waters. One of your water. Didn't know you had two waters?
Yeah. Well, I knew that because my mum told me.
So, one of my waters had gone. Where all this water had come out of me, God knows, it must have been all the infusion drips, mm-hmm, coming back out that I'd had.
Or Powerade.
So, they're like, right, well, you are having contractions. I wasn't feeling them. I just wasn't feeling them at all. And I got to 3.5 centimetres and didn't feel a thing.
Getting your lashes done.
And your lashes done. Went for a little stroll around Speak Retail.
Yeah.
And from nowhere, there was just people of every profession. Right, we need to do your blood pressure. We're going to give you a steroids injection. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And I was like, where's my mum? Where is poor Chris?
Mm.
I hadn't even rang him at this point because I thought I've already rang him home from work on Saturday,
mm,
and I'd just pissed myself. I don't want him to do that again. He finishes work at like 2 o'clock, it'd be fine.
Mm.
And there's these people coming from everywhere, still vomiting, mm, by the way. And I was like, I just want my mum. My mum gets there, Marksy's picnic in hand. Right, let's get going. And I was like, Mum, the baby's too little. They've had to give me steroids injections. As you do, mm-hmm, having a good cry. So that was on the 5th of November. Never made it to Matu. What I did have, though, was a Mackie sat on Ormskirk Hospital bed looking out the fireworks at the window there. Oh, how the mighty fall. And then it was 2 days. I was in labour for 2 days. He didn't come till the 7th of November.
Strange.
And it was just stop, start, stop, start. And in the end, he said, obviously, your waters have been gone for 48 hours, yeah, now. We're going to have to induce you. Obviously, baby's prem. We've given you steroids. We've given you a course of antibiotics. Mm-hmm. We've done everything we can to this point. We'll monitor you very, very, very closely at this stage. Are you happy that if we needed to call a C-section, we'd call it? And I was like, well, hang on a sec, no one said about cutting me open.
Mm.
She was like, well, we're going to go for natural. And I was like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
If it's an emergency, yeah, but not voluntary. It's something I hadn't even considered.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes round, they give you that centosinon drip or whatever it's called. And they just turn it up every so often. Like, yeah, you give yourself some and let me turn it up, hun. This hurts. So I'm, you know, bouncing on the ball, thinking I'm absolutely fine.
Mm-hmm.
Just had a little bit of paracetamol, bit of gas and air. I was like, thought I was going to be Mother Earth.
Mm-hmm.
How wrong was I? Like, I got to about 7 centimetres and I was like, just fucking give me the drugs.
Give me everything.
All of the drugs, all of them, line them up and give me them.
One after the other.
Preferably all at the same time. So I had some Pethidine.
Yeah.
I had a little nap. Then I had an epidural where they hit a nerve in my spine with the epidural.
Oh.
Which was a game changer, let me tell you. To the point where they had to make my mum sit down because I'm holding my mum, having a contraction, having an epidural, and my mum's getting all over hot. Chris is having, he didn't know what was going on, bless him, but he's just like, you're okay, Luce, you're doing really well.
Just a bit of a moral support.
Like, pat, pat, pat on me head. And then, yeah, 10, so I had the drip at like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And by 10 past nine, I was pushing.
Mm-hmm.
And I pushed for 31 minutes and he was out. Mm-hmm. But when I was telling them I needed to push.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, no. I was like,
yes.
Well, it's either going to be a baby or a big, massive shite. So,
I might use that line to advertise this episode. It's either going to be a baby or a massive shite.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Someone needs to check because I'm telling you now, this kid's coming out.
Mm.
So, and she was like, oh yeah, you are. Hang on. And from nowhere, I think there must have been, no word of a lie, about 15 people in the room when I had Freddie. Because he was prem, because I was poorly,
mm-hmm.
there was a neonatal consultant, a neonatal registrar, a neonatal anaesthetist, a neonatal nurse.
Mm-hmm.
There was like 5 or 6 neonatal people for Freddie.
Mm-hmm.
Then for me, there was a lead midwife, a student midwife, the anaesthetist, a consultant.
Mm.
And I'm just on show for the whole world. I was like, welcome.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show. Actually, legs and stirrups. Welcome to the show. Sorry if I scream. Don't mean it. It's not personal. But it's hurting.
Yeah.
And I don't remember saying any of this, but apparently that's exactly how I was mm-hmm. with it. And then I remember pushing. And I very vividly remember the midwife who delivered Freddie was called Jen.
Mm-hmm.
And she called for silence in the room. And it fell
mm-hmm.
silent. And I was like, I can't do it. And she's like, you look at me now. The cord is around the baby's neck, so contraction or not, you push this baby out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so true what they say, you get this strength from nowhere. Mm-hmm. And out this little human comes.
Mm-hmm.
And for a minute you're like, oh, what's going on? And then they hold him up like Simba off the Lion King with his little winky dangling down. It's a boy. We knew it was a boy anyway.
Mm.
But he needed help.
Mm.
He needed oxygen. And that was it. Off he went. I got a kiss and that was it. He was gone. And then it was like, Chris was like, what do I do? Do I stay? Do I go? And I was like, don't you leave our little boy, you go. In the meantime, I'm having to be stitched up.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got my mum My mum went out to tell my sisters and my dad, who'd been sat in the waiting room for 2 days, by the way, playing lazzy band, seeing who could shoot the lazzy band the furthest. And Chris has gone to Skaboo with Freddie. My mum's out there, and all of a sudden, it was so quiet. And I can just remember feeling so alone, thinking, what the hell has just happened to me? And I can't see Freddie. Where is he? Like, where's he gone? And I knew where he was. I knew he was. But it's that feeling of, he's gone out of me now, and I've kept him safe for the last 34 weeks. I need to keep him safe now. And it was about 3 hours-ish until I went down to Skaboo to see him. And it was heartbreaking, but they had to get me to eat because of the sickness. And I was sick one more time after I'd given birth, and that was it. The sickness was gone like that. And that tea and toast they give you is, that's better than any of the drugs they give you. It's like a miracle. And I thought that would be the end of the trauma, because you've gone through birth, you know, you've had this premature baby, and he was tiny. He was really little. I've got a hat that now fits on an apple.
Wow.
That was the hat from when he was born, and my sister's nicknamed him Applehead, and it was just so little. And I thought that was the end of the trauma, and it was really just the beginning. So after all of that, it goes down to Skaboo, and by the time I got down there, the first image I've got of Freddie is walking into the Skaboo neonatal room, and he's got all these tubes and wires and this tiny little cannula in his hand, which they had to clamp his hand in a vice because his hand was so little. When Chris described it to me, he said they put it in a vice and just had to tap the veins because it was so little. They couldn't, you know, what's it when they put around your cock?
When they do, like, your blood pressure, they tighten it.
Begins with C, can't remember the name. They had to put his little hand in a vice, and it was just, I'm glad I wasn't there. Chris said it was heartbreaking to watch, but there was tubes, there was noises, there was beeps, there was just not how I expected my first few hours with my baby to be. And I was allowed to hold him while he was still hooked up to everything. And he was just lost. He was lost in my arms, lost in Chris's arms, because he was so tiny. And then, you know, he had these antibiotics and they were treating him, and these, you know, Chris had to go home. That was the other thing. Chris had to go home. Why?
What, I say why?
Yeah, no, I wasn't allowed to stay because Freddie was safe, and they put me on the ward. So first of all, they took me round to the ward. And they didn't put me on a ward with other people, but that's where I was supposed to go. And I think my mum had said to them, she needs to be in a room. Like,
you can't put
her on a ward with people who've got their babies, and she hasn't. And the midwifery care that I received in Ormskirk was absolutely, I just cannot fault it. They were incredible. They're all heroes to me. And I think every nurse and every doctor, everyone who works in the healthcare profession, the admin staff, the cleaners, everyone is a hero in their own right. But to me, they will forever be on a pedestal, and I am forever indebted to them for not just the care they gave to Freddie, but the care they gave to me mentally and physically. However, with that said, that what happened in the days following that was where I really struggled mentally, because, you know, I woke up the next morning after, I think I must have had about 4 hours kip, which is great for when you've just had a newborn baby, I suppose. And I was very lucky that he was cared for in Skaboo, and I was able to rest. But when I woke up and I went to see him, he was having his next set of antibiotics, and he had to, as every baby does, they have to have a heel prick, and his bilirubin levels were really, really low. borderline blood transfusion. So this was the start of the yo-yo, what I call the yo-yo days. Mm-hmm. And the amount of ups and downs we had with, yes, he's getting better. He was treated on a billy bed, mm-hmm. Like he was having a little baby sunbed. Because he did look like a little baby Bart Simpson. He was so yellow. And it was November. I couldn't take him anywhere in the light for him to get natural vitamin D. Mm-hmm. To take that yellow jaundice tint away. So he was in this billy bed and he kept doing his bilirubin levels and he didn't really move a lot. But then it was like, okay, well, if they're not going to move a lot, doesn't need a blood transfusion, maybe he just needs to go and have some natural daylight. So I prepare to go home, and then so a junior doctor would tell me, right, we're going to prepare you to go home, prepare you for discharge. And this happened from about 4 days in to about day 9, mm-hmm. every day. And I think on day 8, I finally snapped. Mm-hmm. And my poor mum, honestly, again, superhero cape went on. And she had to take me out the room from where I was because I lost it with the consultant. Mm-hmm. Because the junior doctors were telling me you can go home. So I'm packing my bag, putting Freddie in his going home outfit. And then being told, actually, we need to keep you for one more night. And for that to happen for a number of days on the bounce does things to your mind that you... I know it was the best thing for him because he was safe and they were doing the right thing by keeping us safe. Mm-hmm. But there was no... I just don't feel like there was any consideration for the mental impact that would have on me. Freddie was obviously no different. Mm-hmm. No different. He was fine. So then when we finally did get discharged, it was on the condition that we had to come back the next morning to have his blood repeated again. And I was at that point, I was like, fine, I just wanted to go home. Mm-hmm. There was a night when my mum had to take me out the room, my sister Laurie was that worried about me. She asked the nurses to take Freddie and look after him for the night because they can do that. Mm-hmm. And she sat, they wouldn't let her stay with me. And she sat outside on the bench outside the postnatal ward all night. Oh, in case I needed her. And I'll never, ever, ever forget that. Yeah. It was like she was with me because I knew she was just there and she didn't move. She didn't go home. Mm. She sat on that bench all night. And that's exactly what I needed. Mm. Because nothing prepares you for... I thought the giving birth bit was the worst bit, and it wasn't. Mm. It was like, I just wasn't prepared for what was to come after that. And I was propelled into this much sooner than I thought I was going to be. I wasn't ready.
Well, I don't think anyone, when they're pregnant, researches what happens if your baby's born prematurely.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have a clue.
I had a bit of an understanding from being a prem baby myself, because I had a lot of questions for my mum when I got pregnant. But I never expected that. Mm. And each birth is different. And, you know, when people say, Chris and I get asked a lot, are you having more children? And one thing people say to you when you say, oh, you know, I'm not brave enough, I don't feel mentally strong enough to do it. Mm. One thing people say to you, oh, no two births are the same. No two pregnancies are the same. And that might be very true, but the fear of doing it just... It's enough. And, you know, thankfully, Freddie is a very healthy boy and he's had a very fulfilled life. Mm-hmm. And being prem's not really had that much of a bearing on him. Mm-hmm. We both have the same condition with our eyes, mm-hmm. Which is a result of being premature. He has it in his left eye, I have it in my right.
I didn't know that.
So we just turn each other's glasses upside down. But yeah, it's a muscular thing in your eyes. So your eye muscles are the last thing to develop.
I didn't know that.
In the womb, apparently. So yeah, birth was... Although it was very funny, probably the way I've just spoke about it. It was actually the biggest life-changing thing I've ever been through. And actually, I look back and I think I am so much stronger than I give myself credit for. I was stronger then than I give myself credit for now. Mm-hmm. And I was ready. I wasn't too young.
Mm-hmm.
And I was ready to be a mum.
Mm-hmm.
It just... Nothing prepares you for having a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing prepares you for having a premature baby either.
Mm.
So, yeah. Birth was hard. Really hard.
Do you think you have fully processed the trauma from birth?
I don't know whether I ever will. I think I've accepted it.
Mm-hmm.
I've accepted the situation. We did go back. Chris and I went back because I really, really struggled for the first 12 months coming to terms with any of what happened. And there was lots of things that happened when I got admitted to coming home with Freddie. Those 10 days, 11 days were a blur.
Mm-hmm.
And there was lots of gaps for me. So we went back for a debrief.
Mm-hmm.
When Freddie was about... he was nearly one.
Wow.
And I didn't realise how much it had affected me until it was coming up to his birthday. And I couldn't tell the story of his birth from start to finish without missing things out.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was gaps in it. There was just gaps in this... timeline.
Yeah.
So they got all my notes back out and debriefed us. We went back to Ormskirk and met with the midwife who delivered him and the consultant who looked after me, who was still working there, thankfully, and they debriefed us and we had a coffee and about an hour with them, and they talked us through everything, and they were really, and they offer that to anyone, you know, if you were to ask for it.
Oh wow.
They offer that to anyone. And I'm so, so thankful that they did, because it really helped. And then I felt like I could accept it.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll ever process it, because I've compartmentalised.
Your brain protects you, doesn't it?
Oh, massively.
Massively.
And I think this is why people do have more kids, because it does hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Of course it hurts. You're getting a watermelon out of a hose pipe. It's gonna hurt.
Mm-hmm.
However, the brain, it does protect you and make you forget just how painful it is. Because people wouldn't have more kids.
Mm-hmm.
And people go on to have multiples of children.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah. I think for me, the trauma of it, I'm choosing to only remember the good. I've obviously talked about some of the tougher stuff here, but generally I choose to remember the good stuff. And, you know, some people's stories are very different and they don't come home with their baby.
Mm.
And that's one thing that, you know, things could have been very different. So one thing I always try to remember is, no matter how hard I found it, someone's always had it harder.
Yeah.
And I think that's what keeps it from really coming.
Taking over.
Yeah. And 11 years later, it's still hard.
Yeah.
And I think it'll forever be hard. I think you'd have to ask my mum about when I was born, Prem, at 32 weeks. It's 35 years next week. I'm sure she would find it hard.
Mm.
You know, I don't think you ever get over it. I think you just learn to live with it as part of your life.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about, because I remember coming up to Bella's first birthday, with you saying about you coming up to Freddie's, and I remember just being an emotional wreck, like everything would set me off.
Yeah.
I'm talking like maybe for the 3-4 weeks before her birthday, and it was like I couldn't even think about it. I couldn't comprehend the fact that she was turning one, but I couldn't, Steve was saying to me, why are you so upset? And I said, I don't know, I can't tell you now why I'm so upset thinking about Bella turning one. And I think now, because I have begun to process the trauma of birth, I think it is that event coming back around again and the trauma that you've been through.
Yeah, because it's not just your body. Your body's such a small part of it.
Mm.
it's what happens mentally that it's really hard to explain how it hits you mentally, because you literally change in seconds. You as a you change in seconds from being this independent person. Okay, when you're pregnant, yes, there is another person relying on you, but not in your arms. Mm-hmm. That person's tucked away in your belly.
Safe, secure.
Yeah.
Everything they need.
Everything.
At any time.
Fine.
Yeah.
It's absolutely fine. Whereas when they're out, they're out.
Mm.
And it's in that instant. And I think knowing that your life can change in that split second, yeah, it's powerful.
Yeah.
It's really powerful. And I think as parents, as mums, we do protect ourselves when that comes around every year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, every parent, be it dad, mum, grandparent, probably feels some form of way when the baby's birthday comes around.
Mm-hmm.
But all probably very different as well. And one thing I say to Chris is, you know, we always talk every year on Freddie's birthday about how we feel.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think we've done in this last year, being parents? And his perspective and view has always been very different to mine. Always.
Mm.
Positive, but always very different. And I think it's really important to understand that mums and dads, or guardians, male and female, or whatever, both bring something very different to parenthood. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be really rubbish if everyone was the same.
It's a very valid point.
You look very thought-provoked.
Yeah, I was thinking. From a trauma perspective, because I linked. I'm going to say a few different traumas together and attached them to the birth of Bella. One being the physical act of birth, and the other one being what I describe. And I do joke about it now, but it was probably the darkest days of my life, as my complete identity loss. And I feel like when you've just said, literally in that second that child is born, everything changes.
Everything.
Did you go through any sort of identity questioning, or did you?
I still am now.
Yeah.
Still. And I've done lots of different things since Freddie's been born, you know, activity-wise, job-wise, friendship groups, physically, looks-wise, the way I dress. The only identity I have now that I'm comfortable with is Freddie's mum.
Mm. It's interesting, isn't it?
I know I'm still Lucy, and I'm still my own person, and I'm a fiercely independent person. Anyone who knows me knows that I'm very, very independent, and I can fend for myself. But I do identify as Freddie's mum.
It's interesting. Steve and I were having a conversation about, it was when we've been together for 10 years, last month. And we were just talking about different things, and he said something, and he just said, yeah, I know, but I just miss my Amber. And he meant it from, like, a physical appearance perspective. I don't mean weight. Obviously, my weight is different now to pre-Bella. But he means, like, how I used to dress, how I'd wear my makeup, what my hair colour used to be, because it was always wild. And I just said to him, you need to realise that version of me doesn't exist anymore. Not for anything other than, I just feel like the growth that has come from having that trauma and having to face and process that trauma, or begin to process it, has made me into a completely different individual. And obviously there's still traces of Amber, like you've just said, you're still Lucy. There's still traces of me, but the fact that I am a mum and have been through pregnancy and birth has made me into a completely different person. But involuntarily.
Your perspective's probably very, very different as well. Yep. I think your whole outlook and perspective on life entirely changes. And I do... It's funny you should say about the physical identity.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really struggled with not going back to the job that I left when I had Freddie. So I was an air hostess at the time.
I
was
cabin crew
for an airline, and it was the only job I'd ever wanted to do. And I absolutely loved that job.
Mm-hmm.
It had its moments, and it was a crazy ass job that, you know, but I was living my dream out. All, you know, you again asked my parents, what did Lucy want to be? And all I ever wanted to be was an air hostess.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing it. I was doing long haul. I was getting paid to lie on a beach. I was going to Florida and getting paid to be there and go to the parks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was working shorter amount of days in the month, and it was very unsociable, but I created this network around me of people that did the same job. And mm-hmm. I, like, we all, our Saturday night might have been a Tuesday night when we go out and have dinner and drinks and whatever. And I really struggled with losing my dream career when mm-hmm. I had Freddie. And now to this day, I'm so lucky, so privileged to do the job I do mm-hmm. now, and I've worked my way up to mm-hmm. that. But you know, if I won the lottery,
mm-hmm.
I'd still go back and be cabin crew.
Would you?
Yeah. 100%. And I'd do, people think about, there's this perception that they're just waitresses and waiters in the sky who serve you tea and coffee. And I think people that do think that need to have a really long, hard look, or just go and have a look what cabin crew do to train
mm-hmm.
and go back and tell them that they're just a waitress or a waiter in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the going through the airport.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the, you know, pointing out my exits on the plane. And I loved all of that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I loved pointing the lighting yeah. strip, the life jacket.
It's creative though, right? It's performance elements.
Yeah.
It?
And it, you know, you're so privileged to meet so many different people yeah. doing a job like that. You know, there's not many walks of life where you can meet 600 people in a day
mm-hmm.
in a really confined space for a really concentrated time. Like, by the time you've took off from Manchester to London in, let's say for argument's sake, in Toronto in Canada,
mm-hmm.
you know someone's life mm-hmm. inside out.
Mm-hmm.
And you've held their baby while they've gone to the toilet themselves. Mm-hmm. You've, you know, got them an extra meal because they were a bit hungry. You know what their favourite drink from the bar is because they've ordered it. And they don't want ice in a slice, they just want ice.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how you get to know them people. So I am very, very passionate about what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, well, I resented Freddie for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I resented that
mm-hmm.
because I'd had this baby, I couldn't go back and do that career.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely could have gone back and done that career, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
It was a choice then of being mummy yeah. Lucy to being air hostess Lucy
mm-hmm.
because I didn't want to miss him growing up, etc, etc.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of my friends who are still air hostesses that have got multiple kids and make it work, and they're the most fantastic parents, they're the most fantastic mums and dads
mm-hmm.
and that's brilliant for them, but it wasn't right for me
mm-hmm.
but I absolutely, yeah, that's where I felt like I lost my identity because I was my job.
Yeah.
I absolutely was my job.
I think I would be very similar to you there in the fact that I didn't want to have a baby mm-hmm. at a certain point because my career was me.
Yeah.
And what I did for a living to me was really, really important. And I think I'd picked that up from my parents, from about a work hard, you'll get rewarded. And from a financial position of always having that struggle
mm.
when it comes to you, if you work really hard, hence the four jobs at once in a week, if you work really hard, you'll be rewarded for that financially. And I think I have this big, I don't want to say chip on my shoulder, you'll understand what I mean. I think we've talked about it when we chatted anyway, when we met up for a coffee about career and development. But because two of my qualifications are in dance, if I ever talk to anybody about what I would love to do as a job, but my career, my qualifications are in dance, to me, I already perceive that they don't take me seriously because your qualifications are in dance, but a master's degree is a master's degree. It has to be regulated by the universities and the government to say that it's a level 7 qualification. So I don't know why I have this, but I still to this day think if I apply for that job and I put a dance degree, a PGCE and a dance master's on there, that they're not going to take me seriously, but I know I could do that job because I have a creative brain.
Yeah. There's a phrase that obviously doing the job that I do, working in HR yeah. and resourcing, people say, oh, I'm just, oh, it's only.
Yeah.
And they're two of the most diminishing, self-diminishing phrases you can use.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm only a level 7 dance teacher or dance creative or
yeah.
whatever it is that you would say about yourself. Whereas, you're right, I think when we sat and chatted about careers, I was saying to you, but how transferable are your skills because you've written a curriculum,
mm-hmm.
you've delivered a curriculum. Just because it is in that field doesn't mean... I was actually having this conversation with one of my friends yesterday who rang me for some advice about where she is currently and what, you know, next step she wants to take. Mm. And just because your path has taken you one way right now doesn't mean that... I mean, who'd have thought... going from being an air hostess to working in HR.
Yeah.
But actually, there's two very common things, and it's people.
Yeah.
You're a people person.
I'm a massive people person.
So,
if I could do this all day, every day, I'd be fucking set. This would be like the dream.
Get it on TikTok.
I don't know how to use TikTok. I need a bit of Freddie's help.
He's not allowed social media. He has no social media. He's not even allowed online gaming at the minute.
Yeah.
That's the other thing of parenthood that people don't tell you. All the shit that comes after it with social media and the best of this and the console that and Fortnite and Goat Simulator and oh my word.
Yeah.
It's a minefield.
Yeah.
Because all the other kids are doing it.
Yeah. Keeping up with the Joneses. But pressure.
What do you say to your kid? Like I know we spoke about this before, but we've taken Freddie off online gaming because he's a much better person, not on it.
Mm-hmm.
He is. And it's a reward now rather than coming in from school and sitting playing on his online gaming because all the other kids are.
Mm.
It's addictive. Yeah. It's their version of a drug.
Yeah.
It is addictive. Yeah. And to be in with the in crowd in school, you've got to be doing it. Yeah. And he struggled at first when we took it off him. But Chris and I have stood very firm side by side on this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one thing I'd say about us as we are a team.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, even if we disagree with the other one, we would never say that in front of Freddie.
Yeah.
And he would never know that we disagree. We disagree in private.
Mm-hmm.
Our friends wouldn't say that. We'll quite happily have a disagreement in front of our friends, but in front of Freddie, we very much are
a united front.
Very united front. And, you know, recently he's asked to be have WhatsApp. Now, all his other friends have had WhatsApp for a really long time.
Mm.
And we were like, nope.
Mm.
We didn't even want him to have a phone. The only reason he got a phone was when we went on honeymoon to Florida.
Mm.
So I could track him. Quite simply,
yeah.
If he got lost, I could track him.
Yeah.
It was the only reason.
Yeah.
And he's got to have a little bit of freedom somewhere. But it goes back to what we said before. Growing up today is not like when we grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's going to high school in September. Mm-hmm. Doesn't even walk to school by himself. And we need to start letting him do that.
Yeah.
Because come September... He's not going to want his mum and dad to walk him to the school gate.
No.
Because that isn't... And I respect that. But letting that go is hard. So that's why we are quite strict with the online gaming and the social media thing. And I do check his phone every night. Not because I'm some type of mad stalker. But I don't think at 11 years old, a child knows how to... communicate so effectively in writing that someone wouldn't take that what he's saying offensively. For instance, Freddie is very direct.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very, very direct kid. And he just writes it as he would say it.
Mm-hmm.
If someone's in a bad mood,
mm-hmm.
and you don't know it, whether a person's in a bad mood at the end of that phone or not,
mm-hmm.
if someone's in a bad mood and they read that in a funny way, that can actually cause issues.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you say it in person, it's very different.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to educate them on how perception is everything. And no one's feelings are invalid. So if someone comes to you and says, I feel like that message was a bit off.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they've perceived that message. So that's why we're trying to be really careful mm-hmm. with what he has access to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he won't have Snapchat. He won't have Instagram. He won't have Facebook. I don't think the kids would even bother with Facebook these days.
Facebook's not cool anymore, is it?
I mean, it is in our era, in your mid-30s. you know, all those things, they don't need. I think it just causes more issues than it solves.
Mm.
And I've seen some really bad examples of big groups being created and people being vilified on them, and you know, Snapchat, where you can, once you've opened the message, it gets deleted. But I think once it's out there, it's out there.
Mm.
You can't take that back.
Mm.
You know, people getting people filming people being battered and bullied, it's and
terrifying.
It terrifies me. So I know we can't wrap them up in cotton wool forever, but it's the same with online gaming.
Mm.
If someone's not particularly good at a game, they get vilified for that in school.
Mm.
So what's the easiest thing to do? Just take them off it.
Mm.
He still can talk about it. He still knows what it is. And then he earns. The other thing is, they all become bloody YouTubers.
Mm.
And they sit and commentate on the game. And it, you know, it's, me and Chris always say, it's like, guys over here. And it's all like this YouTube type commentary
mm-hmm.
where these kids sit and play games all day and film themselves and make millions. Well, unless you're going to make me millions, hon, you need to pack that in because I don't want to listen to it. And you will not have a YouTube channel, so there's no chance.
Yeah.
And I don't want to listen to it. Mm. It's too much.
Mm.
So you can earn it for half terms and summer holidays, and you can have it an hour a day, maybe a bit more, but you're not having it of a school night. And even of a weekend, he has to have done something exceptional to get time on it because it just becomes a need. And the very first few weeks we took him off it, oh, we were the worst parents in the world because he had to get creative. Whereas now, he's done nothing but build Lego.
He's
been off school poorly today. And he's built Lego all day, hasn't touched a game.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes back down to being creative and having boundaries and knowing the difference between right and wrong. And but no one tells you this when you've just pushed that tiny baby out and that's where you change. And it goes back to what we said before, your life changes in a split second. Mm. And even now, I have a word with myself, like, am I doing the right thing?
Mm.
But one thing you should never ever discount, and I've learnt this myself and I now really believe it to be true, never discount your instinct, ever.
Mm-hmm.
Ever, because 10 out of 10 times it's right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah, stay in school, don't have kids.
We've talked a lot about your challenges. What would you think is your biggest reward with Freddie? It can be with him, with you, with the family.
The biggest reward that we get from Freddie is an utter, inexplicable feeling of pride.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone in both Chris and I's families are very influential people. Mm-hmm. You know, my mum and sister, Laurie, were so integral in those first couple of years. They both are self-employed
mm-hmm.
and they both arrange their work around looking after Freddie, so I didn't have to put him in nursery a lot of the time. And they, he's been shown the what I believe to be the right way from the very get-go, and he's had consistent message no matter who he's been with.
Yeah.
And the overwhelming feeling of pride that you get when someone says that your child is a lovely child, a good friend. You know, I'm really not too bothered about him being intelligent. Great to be, and he is, he's a bright kid, but he's an even better human being. I took him out this afternoon to get some fresh air, and we went into Formby Village, and one of his favourite things to do is to go and have a Costa. So he goes into Costa, and I'd said to him, go and sit down in the window over there, and Mummy will bring our things over in a minute. And he goes to sit down, and this little old man and his wife come into Costa, and the guy was really hard on his legs. Now I'm in the queue, so this is nothing to do with me. And Freddie got up and said to the old man, yeah, do you want my seat? I can go and sit a bit further away so you don't have to walk. And that right there explains Freddie in a person. And the gentleman's wife come over to me and she said, can I just say, he is a beautiful young man who, you know, his manners, she said, and he didn't have to be asked, he got up and he offered it. She said, how old is he? And I said, he's 11 years old. And she said, my, that's astounding in today's society.
Yeah.
But that's how I know I'm doing a good job.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily too bothered whether he's the fastest, the biggest, the strongest, the cleverest. I just want him to be a good human being with manners and respect.
It goes far. Speaks volumes.
I'm so proud of us, because it takes an army to raise a child.
Yeah, it really does.
It really does take an army, and it's not just about you as mum, it's not just about Chris's dad. There is so many, as I said, there's so many influential people, and we're so lucky and blessed to be surrounded by people who have such a positive impact, both family and family friends.
Just so
lucky. So lucky.
Well, big well done to you both.
And right back at you, sister.
Is there anything I've not asked you about that you wanna talk about, you wanna chat through?
When are we doing this with wine?
So yeah, everyone listening, we have said we are gonna do this again in the summer months. Potentially a little bit tipsy. just to see
how funny it'll be.
I mean, it may not ever make it to being published.
I think it should, for fun though.
Yeah, I mean, it probably will.
Imagine doing a group one with a group of mums.
Yeah, we should do that. I need to sort out Dad's Corner as well, which I'll explain off air, because Chris can get involved if he wants to.
Oh, he loves it.
Yeah, he can get involved. Okay, so we've got two closing traditions.
Okay.
Now, you haven't been briefed on what these are. They're not...
Quite
they're
nervous.
Not, they're really? Not, no, they're not terrifying. Please don't be nervous. You'll absolutely be fine with it. First one is, what is one thing you wish you knew about parenting before you became a parent?
I don't want to say the obvious thing of how hard it is, because I don't think anyone has had kids. What's the one thing I wish I knew about parenting? I think the one thing I wasn't braced for was how to handle a little person's emotions.
Please talk through that, because that is currently my day-to-day life.
They're just so irrational.
Oh my God. I'm so glad you used that word, because that is the exact word that I currently describe.
There is no... So I still say this to Freddie now, and I say it to my niece Alice. I do not negotiate with miniature terrorists. I simply refuse. I do not negotiate with miniature terrorists. Because that's what they are.
Mm.
They're a pint-sized terrorist. Sent to press every fucking button you've got to the brink of absolute insanity.
Yeah.
And then they give you this big, glossy-eyed, wide-teeth smile. And your heart melts there and then. And you're like, sorry, who am I? Where am I? And, oh my God, you're the cutest specimen that I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think the hardest thing is dealing with how irrational their thoughts and feelings are.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, there's so little for such a small space of time,
mm-hmm.
that although it feels horrendous right now,
mm.
and obviously I can say this because I'm out the other side,
mm-hmm.
and I'm about to go into pre-nager
yeah.
situations and hormones and everything else that comes with that. tag Chris, you're in.
Yeah.
I think that the just embrace it for what it is.
Yeah.
And be irrational with them.
Mm.
Just try and see it through their eyes, because you're their safe
mm-hmm.
place. And as we said before, maybe they act like that with you because you are
their safe space.
Their safe space. And they have to be, when they go to nursery, school, out with other people, they act a certain way.
Mm.
I'd much rather Freddie be an absolute little bugger in our own four walls
mm-hmm.
because he feels safe to do so
mm-hmm.
rather than acting out in public.
Mm-hmm.
You've obviously created such a safe place for your child
yeah.
for them to be able to be irrational.
Yeah. Do you know, funny you say that, I remember listening to a podcast maybe 6 months ago with a child psychologist who said the reason we get sort of acting out at home, one is because it's a safe space, but two, especially from children who go to like nursery, school, and then as they grow, is because they are, when they're in those environments, having to abide to behaviour expectations and rules and essentially, you know, classroom management, that when they get out of school or out of nursery and they are back with somebody who is a safe space, they essentially let go of all of their energy, they let it all out, they let that rebellious streak,
all their inhibitions go.
Yeah.
All their inhibitions
and
go.
It made perfect sense. I thought, I feel like I understand my niece and my nephew a little bit better as well. And I just remember thinking, well, of course, because we finish work and what do?
You unwind, you do something to unwind.
You do.
Yeah. And they just don't know yet.
That's what they're doing.
What unwinding is.
Yeah.
That is their version of it.
Yeah.
It does get easier. Yeah. But yeah, the hardest thing for me is dealing with how irrational they are.
Yeah. And it is completely irrational, isn't it?
Like,
as well.
It could be that it's snowing outside and your kid wants to wear shorts to school.
Yeah.
Like mine has.
Yeah.
All winter.
Yeah.
Refuse to wear pants. Because there's a competition going on in school to see who can wear shorts for the whole year. Don't worry about getting sick and having a snood, a hat, gloves, a scarf and a coat on.
Yeah.
But your little milk bottles are out. Because there's a competition in school.
What a strange competition, by the way.
There's only about 4 kids left in it and he's absolutely buzzing and he's one of them.
Mm.
Non-uniform days don't count though, apparently.
Oh, right, okay. Stipulations.
Irrational. if that is irrationality personified.
Love that. And then the last closing tradition. If you could give one tip to either expectant parents or brand spanking new parents, what would it be?
Trust your instinct.
I thought you might say that.
Every time. Every single time. Trust your instinct. So many people have got advice for you. So many people want to tell you about their experiences. Yeah. Write your own story and you are that little person's world from the minute they are born for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
You are your kid's world. You are mum and dad, you are guardian, you are whomever you are to that little person.
Yeah.
If you are a mum or a dad listening to this, always trust your mum and dad's instinct. If you are an auntie and uncle listening to this, a grandparent listening, just know that that parent has put all their trust in you.
Mm-hmm.
So use your own instinct.
Yeah.
It's one thing, parents' instinct, but grandparents, aunties, uncles, friends also have their own instincts as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we entrust Freddie to the care of our friends,
mm-hmm.
you know, his friends' parents. I expect them to parent and look after him the same way I do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's never failed me yet. Mm-hmm. And also, don't be too hard on yourself. That's I know you say one thing, but be kind. Just be kind to yourself, because
mm-hmm.
the world has so many expectations of everyone. You know, social media, we've talked about that. Careers,
mm-hmm.
you know, finances, all of those type of things. Just be present and be kind to yourself, because if you're not kind to you, what are you teaching that little baby?
Yeah. I shared something on my story yesterday, day before, personal account. I said, love yourself as if it's somebody else that you love. And I thought, how profound is that? Because you would never speak to somebody you love the way you speak to yourself.
No.
You would never think about somebody you love the way you think of yourself.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what? It's such a small statement, but it really hit home.
Yeah. I quite often... of a morning, you know, if I know I've got a really long day, or yeah. I've got tough conversations to have, or yeah. whatever that might look like, I stand in the mirror and give myself a little pep talk.
Yeah, yeah.
Not because I'm vain,
because
actually I hate looking in the mirror, but sometimes you need to see yourself having the conversation.
Absolutely.
Rather than having it in your head.
Yeah.
And whatever advice you would give to someone else, take it yourself. Because we're all very good at giving advice, but shite at taking it ourselves.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'm capital S at that, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, just be kind to yourself and your mind.
Yeah.
And it'll pay back dividends.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being bloody tremendous.
Thanks for having me.
And I'm excited for the wine.
I'm excited time. For summer nights doing this. This will be fun.
Thank you, my love.
Thanks, Amber.